there isn't going to be as much time for poetry as I would like. When I said to Douglas Freeman, the four-volume biographer of R.E. Lee in Richmond a week ago Saturday, when I mentioned the incident of the Kentucky man who had two sons. One fought with the North and one fought with the South. Both of them met their end. He buried them in a double grave with their names and the date. And then his personal sentiment. God knows which was right. God knows which was right. And I feel that overwhelmingly our argument against Kremlin, against the Politburo, against the rulers of Russia, that ruling bureaucracy. I feel that our argument is overwhelmingly right, just, and correct. Though we could dispense with a certain mantle of holiness that some speakers and writers have with relation to Russia. They speak as though that country does not have out of its past, howsoever it may be employed now. They speak and write as though that country did not have out of its past a body of culture that bears fair comparison with any other countries over the earth. In the realm of literature, you can't dismiss in an easy or offhand way Dostoevsky and Chekhov. They are giant figures. When it comes to craftsmanship in fiction, Gogol and Pushkin stand with the highest. In the realm of the ballet, in theater art, in music, what are you going to do about Tchaikovsky, Borodin, Mussorgsky, and others? Who knows what contents of culture? Somehow in the future to have expression, there may be in that vast mass of the 200 millions of Russian people today, they have folk art that compares favorably with definitely our own country or any other large country. They had the rodeo or the rodeo among the Cossacks 1,000 years before there was ever a cowhand in this country. What I mean is, there's a mystery about the future as to the Russian people. I don't like to see. Hate and fear of the Russian Politburo transferred to the Russian people. And by way of beginning, a brief venture here into poetry tonight. Perhaps I could mention two or three very little odd things in literature that have to do by the oblique with what's called the new criticism in poetry. Our friend Bruce Weyrich here he don't belong. He's out. A school of poets who have two or three leaders who believe that a nation of people should have an elite, that's their word, who should be the custodians of culture. A select body. People who have an exceptionally sensitive registration apparatus. And one point that I've got against them is that they are not honest. They don't come clean in designating or in naming for us someone elite out of the past that approximates what they want. One of their little minor heroes in prose is Henry James. Well, Henry James had something on the ball, particularly in his early works. His own brother, William James, wrote him when he passed into his new phase in his later years, "You're writing too much and it's too diffuse." And then it happened at a later time that Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., he passed the opinion as to Henry James. 50 years of polite conversation and nothing doing. And another time, the novels of Henry James might as well have been written on white paper with white ink. And there's something of a viewpoint here. In the realm of literature, in the realm of the writer and the literary artist and his responsibility. I put it in a dedication to my book, Homefront Memo, 1943. A dedication to the life, works, and memory of Stephen Vincent Benet. Reading, he knew the distinction between pure art and propaganda in the written or spoken word. He could sing to give men music, consolation, pleasure, entertainment. He could intone a chant or a prayer, pointing the need for men to act. He illustrated the code and creed of those writers who seek to widen the areas of freedom for all men, knowing that men of ideas vanish first when freedom vanishes. He saw that a writer's silence on living issues can in itself constitute a propaganda of conduct leading toward the deterioration or death of freedom. I can't get clear on why this modern school of this one modern school of poets. Why? They have a fear of the current human theme. And they write, and the derivation can be made quite definitely from their works. that we're heading as a society in main civilization over the earth, we're heading into nothing less than a dark age. Maybe you are, maybe time will prove them to be right. But at least they could try to turn a hand over. He saw that a writer's silence on living issues can in itself constitute a propaganda of conduct leading toward the deterioration or death of freedom. He wrote often, hoping that men would act because of his words. He could have been Olympian, whimsical, seeking to be timeless, amid bells of doom, not to be put off. Perhaps I could read from this book, Corn Huskers. Perhaps I could read to you, sons and daughters of Illinois. I don't know, it's deeply moving to be here tonight. There are two elements about it. When I stepped out here tonight, there's a wonderful unity about the audience in this auditorium. Architects, I'd say just about four times out of five, architects fail on what they try to do by way of an auditorium. So that the audience will seem something like a unit. I've seen the time when an audience of about this size was scattered over such a crazy area that I felt all the evening like I was throwing to the home plate from deep center field. And then there's the look of youth about you. You are the future. You are the future. If it could be, if it could be that it's written in the book of fate that across the next 20 years there would be no war, transport will have arrived at that stage where over half of you who are here tonight within that 20-year period would have made five or six trips around the globe, taking it in your stride. No complicated organization on your part before making those five or six trips around the world. Last October, I made that 7-hour ride in a plane from Chicago to San Francisco. Starting early in the afternoon, a little past noon, daylight in Chicago. The prairies of Iowa and Nebraska, monotonous from the plane. So many farms just like the other farms. And then the Rockies. And then the gaunt desert. Salt Lake and the flats around it. And then the Sierra. And then that long, slow landing. It was night and the lights of San Francisco shaped over the earth there. 7 hours. And I thought to myself, how easily now across an ocean, and how the figures are that at any point on the globe where you can make a takeoff and you have the fuel and the engine, it's only 60 hours to any other place on the earth that you might want to go to. I don't know why I think of all of that in connection with the youth of Illinois that's here tonight. And I'm going to offer this piece called, this piece out of the book, Cornhuskers, titled Wilderness. There is a wolf in me, fangs pointed for tearing gashes, a red tongue for raw meat, and the hot lapping of blood. I keep this wolf because the wilderness gave it to me, and the wilderness will not let it go. There is a fox in me, a silver-gray fox. I sniff and guess. I pick things out of the wind and air. I nose in the dark night and take sleepers and eat them and hide the feathers. I circle and loop and double-cross. There is a hog in me, a snout and a belly, a machinery for eating and grunting, a machinery for sleeping satisfied in the sun. I got this too from the wilderness. And the wilderness will not let it go. There is a fish in me I know I came from, salt blue water gates. I scurried with shoals of herring. I blew water spouts with porpoises. Before land was, before the water went down, before Noah, before the first chapter of Genesis. And there is a baboon in me, clamoring claw, dog face, yawping a galoot. Hunger, hairy under the armpits. Here are the hawk-eyed hankering men. Here are the blonde and blue-eyed women. Here are the hyatt curled asleep, waiting. Ready to snarl and kill, ready to sing and give milk.